Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, February 12th, 2019. I have two guests with me today who are very excited to talk to me about our topics. I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Martellaro. I like that.
And also with you today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I am excited to talk to both of you about this because I think our first topic today is kind of interesting, and that is this sounds odd, but we did report here and lightly discuss Angela Ahrendts leaving retail over at Apple, and it sounds like there's more to say on this, which I thought was sort of interesting given how much other people had to say about it when it happened. So, John, I'd like to hear your take on this.
Well, this struck a chord with me because when I was working at Apple, I saw some people get into trouble on the sales side for not being able to execute the visions of the executive team.
Okay.
You know, there is a vision and a product design and a pricing strategy that's set way above the sales team's pay grades.
Yes.
And they are tasked to go out and excite the customers and execute a sales plan and sell whatever it is, whether it's a cube or a iMac mouse or whatever it is that's terrible. You know, the salespeople are put on the line to sell it. And so when Angela announced she was leaving, I thought, and then we had the troubles with the iPhone sales, and especially in China, I thought, you know, this sounds awfully familiar because my boss's boss, I don't know how much I can say, but got into some trouble. And we saw this happen before. So then I started doing research on Friday for Particle Debris, and I found an awful lot of articles that talked about the retail store design, the concept of operations, the crowding, the process you go through, reminiscent of an article last January where editor was trying to get a phone quickly replaced and was complaining about there was organized chaos in the retail stores. Mm-hmm. And I started thinking about these articles and the difference between the architectural design and the luxury brand and the pricing of the phones, and contrasting all that to the atmosphere in the stores, which, depending on your feelings, can be either an energetic buzz or a heaven-forsaken crowd.
Yes.
So, you know, I started thinking about how it kind of feels like sometimes, and then there's a lot of people weighed in on this. You know, John Keat weighed in other articles. Ben Lovejoy at Mindified Mac weighed in. A lot of people weighed in about how the stores are out of control. Mm-hmm. In terms of having a great buying experience, being able to have quality time with a salesperson, be able to feel comfortable instead of, you know, jammed in there, mm-hmm. and long waits for the Genius Bar. It's sort of like, if I can set up a metaphor, it's sort of like buying a $1,000 first class ticket on an airline, and then when as you board and take your seat, you discover the guy next to you has a crate full of chickens.
A crate full of chickens. I think you got a title for the episode, Kelly.
I do. A crate full of chickens. That's going to go out. I apologize in advance to the very confused people using podcatchers. A crate full of I thought this was a tech show. that's going to be awesome. So the thing that I was curious about when I first saw that the news was breaking that she had announced she was leaving and all that, the thing that I wondered was if this was sort of the head that was rolling as a result of iPhone sales, because I don't feel like I care that much, but it seems like a whole lot of people do, and it seems like this but the other part of it, then I was like, but in a weird way, and I know how this sounds, who buys phones at an Apple store anymore?
Like, a lot of people.
You pick them up at the Apple store. I mean, I know that's a thing.
See, I think people, I when it is release day, you know, I think we have to see the forest from the trees. We don't buy our phones at the Apple store because we must have them on release day. And so we stay up until 3 a.m. Eastern, you know, midnight for you Pacific people, basking in the glory of not having to wake up in the middle of the night to do this. But you know, we do this and we make our order and then we either have it shipped to us on release day or like you said, we go pick it up on release day. Mm-hmm. But we are not normal people. We are not the average customer. And there are people buying iPhones today and there was no iPhone release today, right? And some of these people are buying an iPhone that's older than the most recent one too. So
someone today is buying an iPhone 8. Let me just give some people some nightmare fuel there. Somebody today bought an iPhone 8.
Yeah, like many people in the time that we've said those words have bought them, right? So So I would say most of them bought them at Apple stores, or at least a good percentage. Certainly some are buying them directly via their carriers, but I see people in Apple stores buying phones all the time. And I think maybe that's actually the problem. The Apple store, when it was, more Macs than phones, was a buying experience, right? You were buying
words right out of my mouth, Dave.
Right? You were buying something that was going to be with you for a long time, and you had options, and you had to really make a decision about what it was you wanted. Certainly, some people walked in already knowing, but lots of people went in to. Well, really, I mean, you know.
No, I'm laughing because that was me. Like one time, we were set. It was time for Mr. Kelly to upgrade his computer, and he had finally gotten to the point where he was going to switch to a Mac. I was so excited, and we walked into the Apple store to buy him a mini, and I walked out with a new laptop, and he got my old laptop.
See,
so I don't know how that happened, but that's exactly
what
went
down.
Yeah,
right. There is thought and attention paid by the consumer during their time in the store when you're buying that. Mm-hmm. When you're buying an iPhone, most people are buying an iPhone. You just go and you buy an iPhone. It's as though Apple has moved into the market of selling a commodity as opposed to it's their own commodity, their self-defined commodity, right? But there is competition, but you know, like the iPhone is an iPhone and it's an Apple thing. But
it doesn't matter if you get it from Best Buy or if you get it from an Apple store or if the FedEx guy brings it to your house.
Apple is in the commodity business in that sense. They've gone to great lengths to make their stores not feel like that. Mm-hmm. But have they is the question. And how far back has that walked? They did go to great lengths to make their stores not feel like that. And a large percentage of the results of that in terms of the design and the layout and all of that still exist. Mm-hmm. But the personnel have been coached / trained to do the things that they now do there. And it very much is a great, let's burn them and churn them.
Let me weigh in on that, Dave.
Yeah.
So you can set up classes on Swift playgrounds and you can have other classes and presentations and you can have pretty glass windows, but all that doesn't matter if you're not creating incentive buying experience, motivation on people when they walk up to the Apple store and they see a long line to get in to talk to the concierge and get directed around.
Yeah.
Right there, that's not a great experience. CNN.
It's a crappy experience. Yeah.
In my particle debris, I cited CNN, which cited a consultant. And he pointed out that that car dealerships long ago had separated the service department from the showroom. Mm-hmm. So if you go into a showroom from most places, it's quiet, it's relaxed, there's pretty cars on display, there's an eager salesman waiting to talk you through it, take you for a drive, let you ogle the car, stand around it, touch it, have a conversation. Service departments, the ruckus and fuss of the service department and people complaining and sounds of motor noises, that's off in the distance somewhere else separated from the car showroom. Mm-hmm.
And I never thought about that.
This consultant, Jason Goldberg, said that Apple may have to switch to that. That would be a massive change in the design and structure of the Apple stores. But I thought it was a very interesting point.
Yeah, no, it is. So, you know,
I never thought about it like that. That's kind of a good idea.
Yeah, this has changed. Yeah. Yeah. It's how it is. It's the business Apple's in now, right?
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. I will say, though, the thing, and maybe this is just a question of timing, right? The thing that I have noticed is, like, you know, people talked about, like, a lot of people were discussing the Apple stores and not being a great experience, and it's crowded and it's loud and, you know, whatever. And that was happening here in Portland at the at two of the Apple stores that we had. And both of those Apple stores got upgraded. One of them got upgraded from outside of the mall that it was in to its own store. It's one of the Stanford styles, so it's its own thing, and it's got, you know, the giant glass walls, and it's beautiful. And every time you walk in there, it doesn't matter how many people are in there, it doesn't feel unbelievably crowded and jammed full of people. Even when it's jammed full of people, I went when they opened it and it was jammed full of people, and it didn't really feel like that. And the other one is out on the west side of town, in also in a mall, but it moved from where it was into, like, what had been two stores across the way from it, and it's now much bigger and much more open. And even that one doesn't feel quite so crowded, even when it's jammed full of people. And so, like, for me, like, when people are talking about, oh, there's so many people and it's so loud, I'm like, yeah, that's how it used to be, but it's not anymore. But that may just be because in the last, like, I don't know, I think the Stanford store was about 4 years ago. They opened that 4 or 5 years ago, because it took forever. And the one here is the last one Steve Jobs personally approved. So, like, there's a bit of Apple Store trivia for everyone today. They're, like, to me, it's still a decent experience. But my issue is that the only time I ever go there is because I need the service department, to go back to John's metaphor. I'm generally not ever there to buy stuff. It's my computer's doing this thing. I've done all that I know how to do, and I need someone else. Like, this has to go off for repair or something, which actually happened to my laptop last year. My watch is doing this thing, or my phone is doing this thing. And, you know, it's something where I have to call in a professional. And so that's the only reason I'm there. So I don't generally end up at an Apple store shopping.
And to be fair, well, it's two things. Number one, you know, as previously stated,
I'm not people.
We are not normal people.
Yeah, I'm not people. And I totally get that.
Like, it's also, and we've had this discussion a lot on Mac Geek Gab a little bit here, is that the Apple Store is not the best place to go for service most of the time. If it's something that has to be sent off to the depot, like, absolutely do not let the Apple Store do that. It much better to send it to the depot yourself, because mm-hmm. the problem is, when the depot used to have a lot of latitude in terms of what they could do and how they could communicate and all of that. And they still have exactly all the same latitude if you have sent it to them directly.
Okay.
However, if it goes from an Apple store, the Apple store owns that repair all the way through, even though 98% of it is done outside the Apple store. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that is the way the stores are organized and the way their metrics are organized, 98% of that is not only outside the confines of the Apple store, but it is outside the care of the Apple store and the attention mm-hmm. of the Apple store. They are paid or judged based on how quickly they move things through their system and it leaves. They are only rejudged again when it comes back and they have to deliver it to the customer. The entire time that it's out, the depot is judged, but it's up to the store to approve any changes yeah. or anything like that. If the depot has any problem or any question that needs to be answered, they don't go to you. They go to the store mm-hmm. and the store doesn't read that email. Like, literally,
no,
I've seen the store not read that email for a week, and it's bad. So the advice is,
yes. I
mean, obviously that's bad. So the advice is, if the store can replace it or fix it in-house for you, mm-hmm. That's a fine option. There are other options, like an Apple authorized repair center, but the store may have more inventory and more flexibility to do that. But as soon as the store tells you, I've got to send it off, say, great, thanks. I'll get in touch with the depot inside the Apple support app on my phone or on the website, and I'll deal with them directly. And then they'll just send it back to you directly. Yeah.
That's so much better.
So yeah, it's an interesting scenario.
Yeah, but one thing that I thought was interesting with the Apple stores when we were sort of talking about it before was, remember when the watch was initially rolled out and how you could not buy one in a store? if you went in the store, they were like, here, you can try them on and here are all the different wristbands.
Yeah,
and
right.
Now you go open up a website and you place the order like you never left your house. I'm glad you came all the way here.
Welcome to Gateway circa 1996,
right?
Or something.
So I wondered, like, you know, obviously some of that has changed, but I wondered if there was something to that. And I thought it was an interesting idea. And, you know, it didn't seem like it really went anywhere, at least at first. And I don't know if, you know, if it was just, if it was always meant to be a one-off thing or if it was something that sort of went away, but I thought it was an interesting idea. Anyway,
I thought the problem was they didn't have enough inventory in the early days to be able to supply all the stores with what they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it didn't continue. And so obviously, like, it was just a practice born out of utility instead of, like, we actually want to try this and see what happens, or, you know, whatever. So I thought it was interesting. Anyway, right now, I would like to talk to you about our sponsor. Our sponsor today is ExpressVPN. With all the recent news, generally you get it here, about online security breaches and what happens to that data and who has your data and what they're doing with that data. It's really hard not to worry about all of your data and where it goes and who has it and who they're selling it to, for the most part. So you can be tracked by Facebook. You may even be tracked by your service providers, whether it's your phone or your internet provider, and that data could be sold to other people. And one of the ways that you can get around that is to use an app called ExpressVPN. And ExpressVPN is a VPN service that has apps for all your screens. So you can install it on your iPad, on your iPhone, on your computer, be it desktop or laptop, all of that. It's one click on and one click off. It's very, very easy to use. When you're out and about, make sure you've got it on. It's a piece of cake. It secures and anonymizes all of your data, and it does so by encrypting that data and masking your public IP address. So anybody trying to get at you is going to have an even harder time doing so. You can protect yourself for less than $7 a month. It's the number one rated VPN service by TechRadar. You get a 30-day money-back guarantee. And because you're listening to my show, you get 3 months free. Here's what you do. Go to expressvpn.com/TDO. expressvpn.com/TDO, and you will get 3 months free with a 1-year subscription. So the other thing I wanted to talk to both of you about today is, first of all, I know that John has a lot to say about this, but I'm pretty sure Dave's going to have some to say about it too. And that is Amazon announcing that they're buying Eero. Now, for people who don't remember, Eero is one of the mesh Wi-Fi networking system. So when you bring it home, you've got your router, like your central unit, and then you've got outposts that all connect to each other, so you can extend your Wi-Fi out from a central location, so that dead spot in your house isn't a dead spot anymore. And it's a pretty great system, as Dave can attest. And now it is Amazon's system.
To sort of put a cap on the mesh definition, what you described certainly is true with mesh, could also be true with a router and extenders, where mesh really wins the day and adds some extra love to it, is that you manage it all from one interface. Not one interface per device and per access point. One interface sees everything, and the devices know about each other, so they can really kind of help to manage the network. It's not just you have these separate things, and your iPhone chooses where to connect and nothing else happens. No, there's some smarts in the network that sort of help it to run as efficiently as possible. So that's what mesh is. Eero was the first of the consumer Wi-Fi mesh companies. I have to be careful the way I say that. Sonos was actually the first company to use consumer wireless mesh. They just used it for their own speakers, but that's what you had, a mesh network in your house, whatever, 10 years ago, if you had Sonos. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the mesh providers learned a lot of things from Sonos, but that's just trivia. Eero was certainly the first of the consumer grade Wi-Fi mesh providers. Really, it was 802.11ac that made all of this possible, where you could have, you know, wireless backhaul between these devices and all of that. But they're not not the only one, and they're not even the only good one. They are one of the good ones, though. There are other options. Plume is probably my number two with them right now, and sometimes my number one actually above Eero. But Eero has been, you know, near the top of the list. Netgear's Orbi has some things going for it. Lynx's Velop has some things going for it. But if I had to pick a top two, it'd be Eero and Plume, and I'm not sure which I'd pick at the top. It's sort of would depend on who you are. So with that in mind, a lot of people have been upset. Or concerned, I should say, some upset, but certainly lots of concern and interest in this announcement that came out about 5 p.m. Eastern yesterday that Amazon had acquired Eero, because lots of people use it, many of whom do so because I recommended it. So the concern is valid. The first thing I will say is that this does not surprise me. Eero was a venture capital funded company. All VC funded companies have an exit in mind. You know, an acquisition is generally seen as the right kind of exit. You know, but that's not always an acquisition by a public company. Sometimes it's a private equity firm or something like that just buys the assets and then also hopes to sell it to the next bidder. But generally, we want some large/public company to buy this tech or our products or our entire business, whatever we can do at whatever stage we're at for the right price, and everybody gets to walk away and be happy. Especially the people that invested nothing but money into this thing early on. And that's what happened yesterday. Now, a lot of us, me included, thought maybe Apple would have picked them up. But that pipe dream ended, Eero's what, a 4-year-old company, maybe a 3-year-old company. That ended, a good 18 months, maybe 2 years ago. I think if Eero had been around a little bit longer, which again, because of the technology, wouldn't have been possible. But if we could rewrite history, Apple might have bought them and made them into their new airport division. I'm not sure that would have been a great thing either. Given that I don't think Apple ever really wanted to be in the router business. They were forced into it because when they released the iBook, no one had a wireless router. So Apple was like, can't really use Wi-Fi if you can't buy a router. So we'll sell you one. I think Apple was quite happy to get out of that business. And my guess is
I disagree.
Well, my guess is Apple saw Eero and all the other mesh products and said, okay, we are no longer the best consumer experience for Wi-Fi.
That's like the wrong perspective, Dave. Apple is in the privacy and security business. They tout the privacy and security of their phones, of their iOSs. If Apple's going to have door-to-door encryption and door-to-door privacy and security, they got to take ownership of all of the pieces that connect us to the internet.
But they were not good at Wi-Fi. Apple only does things that they are good at, John, and they prove to themselves.
Good by hiring the right engineers. Correct. Hiring the right managers.
But they let all those go. Like they realized that this was not a priority for them. And here's the thing. We talked about
privacy has to be a priority, and you know what's going to happen with Amazon. They're going to be using their technology to figure out what's going on in your network.
I mean, Eero has been doing that already. Plume does a lot of that, and that's part of what makes your network work better. And I think this is part of why.
Apple, I mean, in a wonderfully creepy way.
Well, but no. You don't get to have both, or you don't get to have one without the other. If you want a mesh network, you need, and I'm saying this based on what's been proven so far. Maybe someone will prove me wrong, and that's great. If you were to take Siri, voice assistants are a great example of this, where if you try to build a voice assistant that only knows what the overlords tell it and can't learn by aggregating data, real data from its users, that will proceed and grow and expand much more slowly than one that can openly use all the data from its users. And we are seeing
the problem with that philosophy, with that design philosophy, is we've seen how it's been misused.
Technically,
that's the correct perspective. But what happens is in the process, power corrupts.
But here's the thing. many of us, many of you listening, are totally okay with some level of additional frustration to use Siri versus using, say, Amazon's A Lady or Google's G Lady assistants. And that's fine, right? Like, we all make our choices there, and none of them are wrong as long as they're informed. With Wi-Fi, I don't know a single person that would choose to have a crappy Wi-Fi network just because they trust the vendor more. Like, there may be somebody out there, and it's fine, but I want you to put your money where your mouth is.
I don't think that's the choice.
But that's what I'm saying. With a mesh network, it is the choice, because there are crappy meshes out there that don't learn from the cloud learning. Like, you know, for example, Plume. This is one of the things Plume does really, really well. They, there is an issue with mesh in terms of how devices can roam from one access point to another. And many vendors have tried. Eero in the early days tried to just turn this feature on without being smart about it. It was just turned on universally.
You're talking about devices. Smart networks, Dave.
I'm talking about something else.
Yeah, but hold up.
No, we're having this. Let me get to the end of my point, and then you can argue with me. But you're not hearing me yet. So,
John, use this time to go get your bell.
Right. It's fine. Yeah, you can tell me I'm wrong. I just want to get my thought out. With this roaming thing, it doesn't work. Every device implements it differently. So your iPhone implements it differently than your Samsung device, than your doorbell, than anything else, right? Mm-hmm. And when any of these vendors, and Eero was one of the first, turned it on, like, iPhones stopped working on their networks. You could get connected, and then when you moved to a different part of your house, your phone would show that you had a full bars, and not a single bit of data would translate across that. So they turned it off. When I first started testing Plume, I realized that roaming happened instantly, so fast that I knew my device wasn't doing it, that the network was making it happen. And I asked them, I said, what voodoo is this? How did you solve this? They said, aha, what we've done is we've taken all the learning that we have, because every time a new device connects to our network, we profile it and we see what happens, and we monitor to see if, when that device moves to a new access point, does it magically stop deciding to send any data? And if so, we know that that's not magic. We know there's something wrong. And so they've profiled all these devices. And when your device connects, it looks up the profile and it says, aha, you have an iPhone. You need to be treated this way. And this Samsung phone needs to be treated that way. And your MacBook needs to be treated a different way. And, oh, hey, by the way, that MacBook has more capabilities than it's telling you about. So let's push an option to it that maybe makes your MacBook talk three times as fast on the network.
The Amazon engineers are salivating. I can just see
it now. But so are all the users. That's the thing. This is what we want out of our Wi-Fi. You don't want a safe Wi-Fi solution that shows you full bars and doesn't work right when you go into your bedroom. You want it to be magically fast and all of that. And this is why this is the right way to do Wi-Fi.
It is
the right way. I don't think Apple's the right company to do it.
It's an agenda-free, technology-driven.
Correct. Book. Correct.
But if there's something that Amazon wants to do in the future, they want to open up a port, or they want to eliminate some packet inspection, and they want to let their Echo work in a certain way or introduce a feature, they're going to fiddle with the router and the security in order to create that opportunity for them.
No, that's true. They will make these things work better. You know, make their other wireless technology, like their doorbells and their, you know, cameras and their
Kindles,
all the Echo units and Kindles and yada, yada, yada. They will certainly tweak these devices to make those work better. Hopefully, they will also tweak these devices to make your iPhone and your iPad and your, they own Ring, you know, but whatever, your SimpliSafe device work correctly, because that's a better experience. But you could not buy Eero. You could buy some other
Plume
company that has not yet been acquired. Like, I assume Plume's going to be acquired. If you want to use something that is probably not going to be acquired, like, Plume is a company that all they do is Wi-Fi. My guess is their exit strategy is to be acquired. I've talked with them. I have not asked them that question. So please don't read anything into that. I'm just speculating, truly speculating. But if you want someone that has been in the Wi-Fi business for a very long time, that's doing a very good job with mesh, I highly recommend looking at Ubiquiti's products, either their Amplify, which is their consumer focused stuff, or if you want something a little more prosumer, their Unify stuff, which is like enterprise grade Wi-Fi that you can justify saying you need in your home.
Well, and here's the thing,
I
think
it's not cloud managed. So
I think that John hit upon it inadvertently in the midst of what he was saying, which was agenda free. So Eero doesn't care what you're doing in your network. Eero cares that you have a network and that it works well and that your device can hippity hop from spot to spot to spot, and that all of that is fine, and that if what you really need is Wi-Fi in your backyard, now you have Wi-Fi in your backyard. Eero is to thank, the end. Like, they don't care. And I feel like that's the difference. And that's the difference with all this stuff. Like, when Amazon bought doorbells, you know, they bought Ring. Right? Wasn't that the one they bought?
Amazon bought Ring. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Amazon bought Ring. And, you know, Amazon teams up so you can have a special door lock, right? So that somebody from Amazon can leave stuff in your house. And now Amazon, like, not just wants to sell you devices for your network, like a Kindle or an Echo Base. Amazon wants to sell you the network that you hook your Kindle and your Echo Base to. And I feel like there's more agenda there. There has to be. Like, what good does it do Amazon to sell people Eero devices, Eero networks, in essence, if it's not going to help them in some way?
Oh, I think we're going to see new Eero-type hardware. I mean, it may be Eero/Amazon-branded, but whatever. New Eero hardware that has, you know, Echo functionality built into it. And frankly, I think if you want both of those things in your home, having them married together is much better, because now your mesh point is also a thing you can talk with.
Right.
Right. And that's a cool thing. Just like, you know, Sonos buried or baked the Echo functionality into the Sonos One.
I'm old school. I'm going to define my network. I'm going to go out and buy a Sonic wall router from Dell. I'm going to clamp that sucker down. And I'm going to control it. And if something works,
this is not for you.
That network, if something works, great. If there's something that doesn't work, then I'll figure out how badly I need it and whether I can dispense with it.
But Dave, did you just hear John publicly admit he's going to buy something from Dell?
Oh no, I'm sure Sonic Wall is a known firewall company. But yeah, no, that's great.
You're not the person that Dave described.
Correct.
You are, and there's room
the
for you too.
For whom this is geared. Like, you shouldn't be buying Eero either, right? Like, that's it's not for you. You could put it into bridge mode.
Last I heard, they didn't even support IPv6.
Oh, they've supported IPv6 for about 2 years now. So,
Good.
No, they.
But if you buy one today, Amazon won't have its mitts on it. So maybe
if we can dispense with, and please, you know, forgive me, with all of what I consider this mostly irrelevant concern about this, what I think most people should be concerned with is Eero did two things really, really well. And this is important for mesh products, especially young mesh products. They are becoming a middle, like a teenage, you know, an adolescent mesh product. But I think it's still important. They pushed out updates regularly, all the time, actually fixing things or adding new features all the time. This is one of the reasons they stayed at the top of the market. And in addition to that, but very much related, they were very transparent about the features that they were going to be adding. In fact, they took community feedback very seriously in their forums, so much so that you basically could participate in the voting process of trying to convince Eero engineers, hey, yeah, like, please add this. And there are a list of features that I can point to that are like, I helped guide them, not because I'm Dave from the Mac Observer, but because I am Dave from Eero's forums. And I convinced them that this was an important thing and they paid attention and they did this. And there's other people too. It's not just me, right? I'm not that important, but, my concern is what happens to that. The thing that made Eero great and made them valuable for Amazon to acquire, hopefully Amazon sees that as part of Eero's value proposition and maintains that in an ongoing way. That's the thing that I think is most important. And when I said you should be concerned, it was actually that, not this distraction of if Eero wasn't for you to begin with, And now you're worried that it's also not for you because Amazon owns it. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But for those of us that Eero is for,
yeah,
that's the concern, is what happens now. Will they continue to update the product? Will it continue to be
right.
a market leader? That's the concern.
Right. And market leader is the important part of that, I think, because, mm-hmm. yeah, they will probably continue to issue updates so that it works, so that if there's some new evolution in yeah. something wireless, they can take advantage of it. But to continue to be the market leader by doing new cool things in a in an interesting way and making it useful for people who have more than just Kindles and Echo Bases, then I think it's going to be interesting. So I'm sure we will have more on this in the future. And I want to thank my guests for being with me today. Thank you, Dave, for coming by.
Thanks for having me. John, thanks for suffering me.
It was a wonderful rant fest.
I very Blast. Much enjoyed being everybody's cut man on this one today.
Kelly, I hope you enjoyed your popcorn.
I did. You know, today was very much the kind of day Jeff used to talk about when he would say that he would have John and I on, and he would introduce us, and he would say the first topic, and then that he'd just kick back and wait and watch what happened. And it was really fun. So I hope all of you have enjoyed that too. Please give us your feedback on the Amazon Eero purchase. You can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can find us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can even leave comments in the show notes. I've been your host, Kelly Gaumont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.